okay. More.
Whatever.
Good evening. I was asked to briefly introduce myself. My name is Michael Friedman. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, which actually is very important to this year. We'll see in a second. I'm the second year in the Colwell. The reason it's important is because one of my friends in the Colwell knew that I was preparing this topic, and I'm not sure why he knew about this, but he found an article last week that in Myrtle Beach, which everyone assumes is right next door to Charleston, it's 2 hours away, but in Myrtle Beach there was in fact a UFO sighting caught on tape. I looked at it, it wasn't so impressive, but it made the news because there was also a gigantic foam thing that washed up ashore within like 2 days of it, and everyone has all their nice conspiracy theories. And as he told me this, one of the other guys looked at us like we were insane. And the reason is because we never really thought about this. What do we think about UFOs? What do we think about aliens? Do we have an opinion? Does the Torah have an opinion? If it doesn't, what would it say? What is the ramifications for us? And I like that. Because in Smicha, there was always the curriculum, right? There's the, you have to learn Kashrus, you have to learn Shabbos, learn all different areas of familial life, Hilchos Avelos. I always like the other stuff, right? I want to know what is my perspective on the world. What do I look, when I look at something like a random news story, which is really the spark because I kept seeing news stories whenever I took Google News, there's always the science field, and for whatever reason, it's saturated with random conspiracy theories to like change my cookies or something. But what is my perspective? What is our perspective on these topics? And does the Torah speak to that point? So what I would like to begin with is actually not what I want to talk about, is what the first thing that somebody did say while we were having this conversation is, well, you know, the Rambam has in Hilchos Deos, in his or Yesodias Torah actually, what the view of the Mazalos are, of the zodiac and the stars. And he says very clearly, this is the Rambam, this is not a mystical work, that the stars have intelligence. They have das. They're aware of what's going on. They're somewhere in the category of like malachim, of angels, and they're aware of God. They're aware of what is going on. They have an influence on the world, and they're clearly not on Earth because they're stars. They're other celestial beings. This is Pashit. That would be the Torah's view on aliens. So I reject that suggestion because I want a life form. Right, that there are malachim, that the stars have an influence, that's all over Shas. You cannot get away from that. Well, the Shas, Zohar, every single area of the corpus of Jewish text talks about that. It's not what I want to know about. I want to know about creatures who could come into this room, maybe too big to, a life form, with or without intelligence, that doesn't bother me, that is similar to an animal or a human being, in the capacity that it is physical, that it has some sort of biological needs, right? We know from the world itself that there is a vast array of types of creatures that can live in all different climates, so however it lives will be very flexible. But is there such a creature? If the Torah talks about this explicitly, if it does not talk explicitly, what would it say? And what are the philosophical ramifications for us? And I think in looking, there's actually a range of discussion about this. This really got brought to the forefront in the 50s, Dr. Norman Lamb, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, the president of YU, had a long essay on the theological ramifications of life on other planets. And this was sort of his reaction to the fact that the church came out vehemently against such a notion. They said it was absolutely prohibited to suggest such a thing. It was going completely against their tenets of faith. Unclear exactly what tenets of faith there's a problem with. They just completely rejected it. And he said, we don't have such a problem with this. And he has a 50-something page paper on the topic, predominantly going through evolutionary theories and how they relate to it, but he addresses this, so some of the sources we got from there, various other places, to look, what is the Torah's view on this? And the first source I would like to go to is the sort of the strong negative side, and that is Rav Yosef Albo. Yosef Albo, more of a rationalist, the 1400s Spain. He was a very, very worldly, learned man, both in Torah and in science, medicine, and he has a book called the Sefer Ikarim, where he tries to distill all the tenets of Jewish belief. Not just the tenets of faith, what do we believe? He was actually very patient, very tolerant of different beliefs. He tried very hard to just throw everything out as heresy. But he tried to say, what is it that we believe? And if you look through his book for this topic, you actually will not find anything. I tried very hard to find this. But he is quoted as saying this, so I'll take it for granted that this is exactly what his opinion is, by a different book. We'll see again in a little while. And he says, in the first source here, Yir Anochi Shelo Amu Sheyesh Olamos Acherim. There are no other worlds. Now, he doesn't actually address life forms specifically. I mean, the next line somewhat does, but he says there's no other worlds to talk about. Without another world, there presumably, unless they're nomads, there's no other creatures to talk about, because he's just rejected anywhere for them to even go. And the reason he says this is ki acha she'ein behem bale bechira, since the other worlds, these other places we can go, and the world, word olam, the word world in Hebrew is somewhat misleading. It could refer to a physical world, like our earth. It could refer to a plane of existence. It could be referred to a spiritual world. It could be referred to a community. In any sense of the world, there's no other worlds, because they don't have anything with free will on them. The Einam, Havayim, and Nifsadim, they don't have this existence. They don't have the possibility for failure. They don't have the possibility to be anything. El Kayamim, they're an ant farm. Right? They're just there. There's no point for them to just be there. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world for a reason. He created the world to bestow a spiritual potential in mankind and to make something that can serve him, to do something productive. B'ish, they have no people. The Ein Behem Torah B'Yavoda, we don't have Torah there, right? Pasuk says, Shemayim, Shemayim LaHashem, Ba'aretz, Natan, L'Bnei Adam. The Shemayim is for Hashem. We have the land. This is where Torah is. This is where He gave us the Rishus to be serving Him. Nowhere else. Right? There's nothing else there. Einam Negeim L'Nyan Le'Nukval. There's nothing to talk about. And the crux of his opinion, really, is sort of the anthropocentric view, where humans are the epitome of existence. We are the reason for existence. We are all that really matters. And if we're not there, if we're not there to serve him, right, he probably could not fathom sending someone into space, let alone to one of these other worlds. If we're not there, they don't have a purpose. So without a purpose for a life form, there's no world to put said life form. To some degree, a cyclical argument, but he rejects the notion outright. He is not alone in this. And he is sort of preceded by Rav Saad Yagon, who takes an even firmer stance. Rav Saad Yagon, the 800s, the Abbasid Caliphate, he also was very, very learned in philosophy, in science of his day, etc. And he says, the second source, Metzati, Metzia Gamura, ki ein shemayim bilti ella, below aretz ki imzos. There's no other heavens other than right here when you look out the window. And there's no other land other than right here when you look outside. Nothing else exists. Shemayim ela yesh lehem tachlis. Because this world has a purpose. Va'aretz hazos yesh lo tachlis. But the rest of them don't. Mitzati yakasim she'ed lehem betachlis. He says a pasuk that says proves his point. V'amu mekatza ha'aretz v'akatza ha'aretz. From one end of the earth to the other end of the world. And the mekatza shemayim v'akatza shemayim. One end of the shemayim to the other. That's all there is. Problem with this opinion is that if you look at any scientific journal at this point, any astronomical journal, they have identified not just many other planets, not just many other firmaments. There are dozens of inhabitable planets that they've identified. Places where life as we know it, that fit my definition, loosely or tightly, life could exist there. So he was very well versed in science, but the reality is his time frame where he's existing was a few hundred years prior to the advent of astronomy. He was also living in a time where it was rich with turbulence in philosophical works, in religious works. He's potentially writing in polemics against some other view he thought was a problem, potentially working with the science he has. For whatever reason, he rejects this, but we know there are possibilities, at least, for another planet. There are other possibilities for worlds. So we need to look a little bit further. And the second place we should look, I would say the second opinion is Rabbi Chaskai Kreskes. 1300s in Aragon, he was the crown rabbi of Aragon, which is the role that's either better or worse, we don't have that anymore. It was the political liaison to the government. He would be representative of the Jewish community. They knew that he would be someone the community would look up to, would listen to, and I'm not sure that would work nowadays, but he was the person who was in charge of the community and going back and forth representative to the government. He was also the teacher of Rav Yosef Albo. So it's interesting that his opinion is very much not the same as his student was, and he takes a much more moderate stance. Okay. We were in yeshiva once, somebody came over to us and told us that if the options are ever A or B, the answer is invariably C. Right? It's never so black and white. And he says, Yesh tanim meharayos l'chol tzadim. I can bring you midrashim, and I can bring you sources in every direction you possibly want to go. Right? From Sadi Gon has a pasuk, I get that. But I have lots of other psukim, right? And he addresses, if you were to try to prove this, im latzad chiyuv yesh panim harayos, you want to prove it that there has to be, that there is, that there isn't, I can bring you many different proofs from every different direction. Ratcher. Mehem she'ech yeh, right? They even have proofs that would indicate how they would be, how these words would look. Shehayva olam, im shehayser etzonis, or chiyuvis, if there's a serious aspect, if they have to be something, moneya shelo yichol haratzon, but in the end of the day, there's nothing stopping me from saying, nothing I'm really afraid of to say, that maybe there is another world, maybe there isn't, I'm not sure. The underlined, kasher hayezeh kein, when this is such, when we acknowledge this, kava hisbaya she'ein b'kol tainos she'zacharnu, we can't make any of these philosophical claims to be foolproof. Imatzad chiyuv, imatzad shlili, positively, negatively, we don't have the philosophical tools to say there is or isn't. It's a great possibility. The statistical probability of humans existing is very low, but we're here. Maybe there's somewhere else too. Who knows? The Jitain MS Bedrush. Right? I don't have the ability to give an answer in speculation in searching for this. Mashis Bar Mehem Hu Efsharut Riboy Levad. I just have the possibility. There are plenty of possibilities out there of what there could be in terms of another world being there. Hine, but he does bring one proof. He roi shelo nachik ma sheba bedrush katzatz rizal. He wants to bring one medrash that seems to indicate that he is in fact okay with this. The amram berishon me'avodah zarah. The malabid sheshat b'yud ches elef olamos. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, every single night, while everyone else is sleeping, he's kaviyachol bored. So he takes a peruse of the 18,000 different worlds. And he checks on all of them, and he sees how they're all doing. I have no idea what that means. But it's a Gemara that says, Kadosh Baruch Hu travels 18,000 worlds every single night. The Kavanabo Shashkachaso, Mishotetas, the Kola almost Mehem. He has Hashkacha going on in every single one of these worlds. He's involved, he's looking after every single one of these worlds. So could be that there's a reason for that Hashkacha, right? He's not just going to be there willy nilly. Fair enough. It's a discussion to what degree that Chazal actually knew about the other side of the world. By the 1200s, they for sure knew that there was another side of the world. They knew there was a dateline, actually. Whether or not they knew that people were awake, it's a different story. But v'zehu mashe kavana bedrus hazeh. This is what he says. And he, in the greater picture of this piece, is sort of questioning the anthropocentrism. Right? The Rambam also has this approach that he says that every single creature was created for itself. Right? There's no single creature that was there. Every single one has its role in serving the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Maral echoes this, that whatever nation you're out there, whatever other nation, whatever creature, whatever species, trees, dogs, humans, they all have their role in creation. Kodesh Baruch Hu knows what that role is, and that's great. So he's not bothered by this idea. And so he also talks about the idea that we have to be the center of the universe. Is not something that bothers him. In the process of looking at that, I found that there are about 10 places that claim themselves to be the center of the universe in the United States. Not sure how they're discriminating that. But
it's right here.
Right. So he's not challenged by this, and he, in fact, brings a medrash to indicate that. And when you look through the medrashim, there are actually a lot of medrashim that indicate this. The challenge is going to be what they mean. Because I said, I don't know what it means that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is traveling 18,000 different worlds. That is a very large number. I don't know what it means for travel. It's very unclear. And one of the potentially clear sources that there are in fact other worlds going against the strong claim is the Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is a Kabbalistic work, which means inherently there's a little bit of esoteric quality behind it. But he says that there's a notion of sevens. So we like sevens, right? Judaism likes sevens a lot. There are 7 days of the week. There are 7 weeks until between Pesach and Shavuos, leading up to Matan Torah. There are 7 years to the Shemitah cycle. There are 7 Shemitah cycles to the Yovel. We like sevens. So the Sefer Tzira goes through a list of all the different sevens we can possibly come up with. And he goes through Shehem Nechakim Sheva Olamos. There are 7 worlds. Sheva Rakim. There are 7 firmaments, meaning Shemayim. There are 7 different levels of space. Maybe a horizon, maybe space, but there's 7 of something up there. Sheva Artsos, probably referring to the continents. Sheva Yamim, and it goes through the list. That seems very clear that there are 7 worlds. However, if you look, Sefer Yetzirah, the Vilna Gaon has a parish on the Sefer Yetzirah. And he says, don't get so excited. The world are spiritual. They don't really exist somewhere else. This idea of the Kabbalistic worlds, that in our physical world, everything is a certain quality. Then there's a more spiritual world and more spiritual world, all these different levels of more refined, more intangible world until you get to the Kisei HaKavod and the Kadosh Baruch himself, Keviyachol, however you want to explain that. So he suggests maybe this is not in fact a world. So as Rav Kreska says, we have indications in both directions, whether or not there are, whether there aren't, we can't be certain. But one of the most interesting sources, I think, and this is going to be what the third and strongest opinion really falls on, is straight out of Shoftim. It is a clear pasuk that anyone who has learned Shoftim probably did not notice. And I can tell you the first time I learned Shoftim, I did not notice it. The second time I learned Shoftim more in depth, I did not notice it. And the third time when I was really trying to discover Tanakh, I did not notice it. But in Sefer Shoftim, in the story of Devorah, Devorah, the Shotefes, the Shofetes, who is dealing with Sisera and the Canaanite nations who are oppressing the Jews for 20 years. For 20 straight years, there is a massive just battle between the Jews and this country. And like all great battles, it ends with some random person walking along the road. Yael sees Sisera walking along, recognizes the person. It's a question whether or not Yael was Jewish or not. And she sees Sisera walking along the road, and he says, I'm pretty sure that's the guy we're trying to kill. And she seduces him, and she gets him drunk, passes out, takes a tent spike, and drives it through his head. That's the end of the war. One person happened to be at the right place at the right time. Wherever she was, she ends the whole thing for the Jewish people. And Devorah is so excited, she breaks out in Shiras Devorah, she breaks out in song. And in the process of this victory song, she makes a very obscure line. That is, Arur Meroz Amar Malach Hashem. Arur Arur Yoshveha Ki Lo Ba'u Le'ezer Hashem Begiborim. That Meroz, somebody, is cursed. So the Malach Hashem, because he didn't come to help the Jewish people when they needed him. They didn't come to help when the Jews were in need. There was a big battle. Yael figured out that she needs to help us. Meroz did not come to help us. Cursed is the people that live around Meroz, because they also didn't come to help. And if you look in the Gemara, Mod Katan, it tries to figure out, well, who is Meroz? So who is this really bad person? Who is this cursed person? And the Gemara suggests 2 suggestions. Rashi brings the one I'm more interested in first. The second one is it was a Gibor HaChashiva, right? He was a really big warrior. He led a warrior city. They didn't come. We would have really used that help in the war. That would have been a good thing to do. They didn't come, so we don't like them. Rashi also brings, the Gemara also brings this, Amrle Kochavahu. He's a star. Meroz is a star. The star has inhabitants, and somewhere out there, there is this star and its inhabitants, and they didn't come to help, and we really don't like them. And that implies that somewhere out there, right, we don't call the Shemesh Meroz. Somewhere out there, there's another star. That star has inhabitants, and we don't like them because they didn't come to help us. So,
and they're capable of space travel.
Presumably. Right. Otherwise, and they also have telegram or something to get the message. Right, there is something out there, and the Sefer HaBris, the same source that quoted Rav Yosef Albo, because he didn't quote himself, points this out explicitly. Right, Eksa Anochi, he says very, very firmly, this is Rabbi Pinchas Eliyahu Horowitz. When I first saw that, I got excited because I thought it was a Sefer HaFla, totally different person, or he lived the same time. He was in Vilna, and he was also one of these people who was extraordinarily learned, both Torah in the halakhic sense, in the Kabbalistic sense, science, math, physics, astronomy, medicine. He was a storehouse of information. He also believed that you had to have a well-rounded education in order to understand any of it. So the Torah has to speak to the rest of the sciences have to speak to the Torah, and he used that, and this is his book of trying to synthesize all of those worlds together. He actually wrote it anonymously. Somehow we figured out who it was. We have a very good knack for figuring out who anonymous Svarim are. People try all the time, we just figure out who they are. And he says very, very firmly, Ex anochi ashis libi, I figured this out, the shibli suffik lo lesohu bara aval lesheves yitzel. I believe firmly that there are other worlds. And I believe firmly that a Kaddish Baruch doesn't do things for no reason. And I know firmly that when he's traveling the 18,000 worlds every night, it's because he cares about these things. Yesh behem v'riyim. There are creations on them. There are, in fact, other life forms. There are other things that a Kaddish Baruch created somewhere, wherever these worlds are exactly, somewhere on these worlds. Lama Lagura Lom Asiya, right? He talks about this idea of the Lom Asiya. This is the Kabbalistic worldview. The four main worlds in Kabbalah, Asiya, Yetzira, Bria, and Atzilus. Each one a little more lofty, a little more spiritual and divine than the next one. And he says, Mehiyos bo olamos rabim ma'olam Yetzira, Bria, v'Atzilus. Every single one of them has a multitude of worlds. It's not just that the Graz happens to around the same time as the Graz. It's not just the Graz idea of there are multiple spiritual worlds, and that's very impressive, but doesn't speak to our point at all. Every single one of these levels of spiritual worlds has within it a multitude of worlds. I was one time learning one of these types of Svarim with somebody who was more of an expert. Actually, his father-in-law was a renowned expert in both physics and in Kabbalah. And I asked, well, at what point do I reach the door of Asiya, the lowest world, and I can knock and get into Yetzirah? Like, is it the end of the universe? Is it just past that point of the end of the universe? Like, where is it? Is it another solar system? He said, everything that you can observe, everything you can measure, all the things you can find in a science book, that's Asiya, right? That infinite level, that's this physical level. We didn't get to the other ones yet. Once, you have to be more spiritual. You have to be a malach to get to the next worlds. So, again, islands we're looking for in Olam Asiya, the Kabbalah's keeping track. It says, within that world, Echad Mehem, Kolel Bo Olamos Ein Mispar. Every single one of them has an infinite amount of worlds. Don't bother me with there's only one, there's not one world. I can't even count how many worlds there are. It's impossible to count how many worlds. Kanod the Etzel Mukubalim. All the good Mukubalim know about this. All the guys selling Kabbalah water and red strings, they all know this stuff. How could you possibly make a mistake and say there's one world? He says, "Benizker b'Zohar b'Makomos Rabim," right? He says the Zohar says this all over the place. B'Mishnah and so forth. In Uksin, Asi the Kaddish Baruch Hu LaHanichil LeKol Tzadik 310 worlds. Every single tzadik is going to get 310 worlds of real estate when they presumably after Tzikas Amesim. All these different olamos. Meseches Avodah Zarah. He says, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu Rokev Akaruv B'Shmona Eser Elif Olamim." He adds more detail to the story. Not only is he traveling, he's riding a karuv. I have no idea what that means, but he's traveling throughout all these worlds. These are amazing sources that seem to indicate there are other worlds. But, that's the UFO. Well, there was multiple ones though, so I'm not sure. It's a trike maybe, right? That's what he brings as saying. You could interpret those different ways, right? The Grad did interpret it differently. Rav Yosef Albo Nushas, Rav Sadia Gaon Nushas. So, however they dealt with those makoros, I don't know, they didn't address it. They knew them. He says, what about our raya nechona? What about our foolproof raya? Pasuk, arur meros, arur malach Hashem, arur yoshveha. What about clear as day in shoftim? Right? Ki lo bal v'ezrus Hashem. Amrule kokva hava. Gemara says explicitly, star, right? Imrule gibor hachashiva hava. There was a machlokus, and that's because we can't have any topic without some sort of machlokus. But there's clearly manda amar kokvaya. There's someone in one of the Tanayim, at least Amarayim, is clearly okay saying there's other creatures outside of this world. There's clearly some other inhabitants. How can you possibly say there's just a full? No, there's nothing to talk about. That's someone said that.
Doesn't it say in the Midrash somewhere that Hashem created and destroyed many worlds?
Yes.
In the process of
it says that in two places.
Yeah.
Unclear if that would really speak to our point. There's also a discussion in a similar vein. When I first started preparing the Shir, I really wanted to look into the Nephilim. Because the Nephilim are also this weird thing. And I know there was a rabbi in Charleston, actually, who suggested the Nephilim are aliens. The problem with looking into the Nephilim is no one talks about them. In the Medrash, it says that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai lets somebody misinterpret the idea of B'nai Elohim. Rashi brings a machlokus of what these things are. We have no idea what these things were. And he said, in the context of them, maybe they were, in fact, angels of some sort, this quote-unquote B'nai Elohim, not to be sons of gods, as in the Greek myths, but there was some type of more spiritual creature that came to the physical world, either had children with them, or somehow took hold here and made something. And he said, anyone who suggests such a thing is in Cherem. So people took that very seriously, and no one writes about it. I have no idea what they were. It's very hard to find anything significant about that. The previous worlds also, it is very hard to find anything about them. The Tiferes Yisrael got very excited when they found dinosaur bones, because he thought, this is a clear proof to that medrash. You want to bring me kasha to the edge of the universe, I'll bring you a medrash that proves there has to be dinosaur bones. It's amazing. So all these things, then the Siv argue with him, all these things are very hard to put a stick in and just figure out exactly what they are. But it could be that there are other creatures. That being said, Kashbuk destroyed those worlds. And that's what the Nisiv's problem with that is. That's very nice, but they're gone. So how can you go find these things? They're not there anymore. He destroyed them. So
space travel and the people that were on spacecraft when the time was destroyed, and that's the earth and sea of traveling time.
But something. And then it's hard to say, yeah, it could be that's exactly it. Could be it's totally not. It's very hard to say. He says, this pasuk is going to be our key. He says, Kokva Yahaya Aimer Le Gavra Hashiva Have Lamanda Amr Kokva. The person who says it's a star, the Kasiv Arur Yoshreha. It says, Arur are its inhabitants. The Klausheish Behem Yishuv. They have a city. They have a metropolis going on. Wherever Meroz is, as much as we hate them, they have a city going on. It's amazing. Wherever it is. The Halo Amru Shiva Rakiyim Hem. And he goes and quotes the Sefer Yetzirah. There's seven living levels. And he goes on and on with all the sources in favor of the fact that there are, in fact, aliens. But then he has a very strong caveat. And that actually brings all the shittas together. My caveat is, Im Kaim, Im Havayim Nisadim. He quotes Rabbi Yosef Albo's language, that there's no point to them, they don't really have a job, and they don't have this potential for anything positive or negative. Ela Ba'aretz Hazu. This is the only place that has that potential. It's a very obscure line, but Baruch Hashem, I don't know if it's he did it in his anonymous and he made anonymous footnotes, but someone made a footnote that clarifies what that line means, and that line means, down here, Labala Bashira. There's no one with free will on any of these planets. Meroz doesn't have free will. Labala Bashira actually addresses the point, if Meroz didn't have free will, why are we cursing him, right? I don't curse my dog, well, I don't have a dog, but I wouldn't curse my dog if he did something, because he's a dog, he doesn't, like, why are we cursing them? I didn't understand his answer. Very good question. But there are no other Baal Bechiros other than this world. Efsharus Livchor Bein Atov Shehu Chayim Lahavaya. There's no one else that can choose between good, and that which is, Lebein Ra Shehu Hamaves Lahavsin. We are the only creature with free will in the universe, in the multiverse, whatever exists. This is a twist of that anthropocentrism that, yes, we believe that we're not necessarily the center of the universe. It could be Meroz is even bigger built up. It could be it's incredible. Some amazing place, planet with all these things going on. But they're an ant farm. There's nothing going on. They're just Kadosh Baruch who's watching. For whatever reason he has, and you can ask the same question, right? We first got to Chicago. This is how we're keeping time. We went to the Lincoln Park Zoo. And my son had two observations I noticed. He was around two at the time. And the first one was he thought the tiger was a dog and wanted to pet it. And the second was that he was much more interested in the squirrels than he was in any of the other animals. You can ask. It's very nice for a two-year-old. Why are there squirrels? Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu created lots of things for things we don't really understand the reason for. We have free will. And we are the Amma Nivchai, and it's terrific. And there's lots of things in this world. We're not alone here. And some of them you can identify. You need the ecosystems. You need meiosis, but certain things over Sukkot. I was very much questioning the existence of mosquitoes. But why do these things exist? So that's on this world, let alone the other world. So he says anthropomorphism, or anthropocentrism rather, is not a philosophical problem that comes up when we just address aliens. It's a physical problem, a philosophical problem that when you just look at the world. So are we the center of the universe? I don't care. But in terms of the spiritual, we're the only ones. And this is Eckhart, and I think this is ultimately going to be our takeaway, that we can't know for sure if there are aliens or not, but we can know our role. It's the Ramchal and Derech Hashem, as he goes through all the list of creations. And he actually has a fairly lofty list. He starts at the very bottom of inanimate objects, of rocks and dirt. It's even more complicated because it comes from an organism, like things that are completely non-organic. And he goes up, they have the plants, and you have animals, then you have certain things sort of in between that aspect of a more animalistic creature. Then you have humans. He has Shadim in there. Then he has Malachim, and keeps going up in the levels of Malachim. He has a whole list of all the different creatures. He doesn't actually mention aliens. But in that, he mentions very explicitly that the point of this world is to utilize us. Right? He says, "Hi atachlis v'bria ha'elaheitiv metuvo yisparach shemo l'zulasa." The point of creation is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bestow good onto other creatures. And Hashem wanted somewhere that he could give to somebody else, whatever exactly that means, but he knew that he couldn't just have it himself, he had to create another thing to do it. It's not enough for them to just have a little bit of good. He wants to have the ultimate good that is a relationship with him. That is a relationship, someone who can earn their keep, to get a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ulam Gezerah Hakmaso, he made it in his supernal wisdom, L'Hiyos HaTov Shalim, the best possible good, Roy Sheyeh HaHanhana Baal HaBaho Vahu, that the person has to get, or the creature, whatever it is, it's on the side, it's really us, has to earn their keep. Yishiyakne HaTov Ba'atzmo, Lo Mi Sheyis Lavalo HaTov B'derech Mekar. It's not happenstance. Like they told, I have to hope it's a mushroom. But a boy whose parents were extraordinarily busy, and they gave him a credit card. Right? That's why I hope it's a mushroom. It's a terrible idea. They gave him a credit card and said, whatever you need, use the credit card. And this is normal. A few Amazon orders, there's clothing, some snacks, whatever it is, pays for extracurricular activity, and everything is going very great. At first, he was like really liking this because it's total independence. Every kid's dream. And after a little while, the father notices there's a charge for his office. And from his credit card. He's looking at the statements, right? I'm making this charge, I'm being billed for it, I'm also billing it. And he's trying to figure out what's going on. So he asked the boy, what's up with this? He says, well, I had most of what I needed, but I want the time with you. So I use the credit card to try to bill you. To have a relationship needs to be a two-way street. It has to be that we're trying to earn something. It has to be that. The Rambam says, we are the only ones that have that relationship. The animals don't daven the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Perek Shir talks about how they praise Hashem in their own way, but the Maral says that they be themselves. Right? The Avodas Hashem of a tree is to be a tree. The Avodas Hashem of a dog is to be a dog. They don't choose, but they just do. There are no dogs with a cat complex. They're just dogs. As you know, I mean, my parents have two dogs. I could question that. But they're not a cat, per se. Just they think something. We're the only ones. Animals can't do this, humans can't do, or aliens rather can't do this. We're the ones that can do this. Whatever the aliens are, they're just like a squirrel, they're just like a dog, they're there. There's some reason a Kadosh Baruch Hu had to do that, but they're not anything more. The Hine, the Baram's call says in the last source, Hine nivchan v'nivdal min ha'adad adam levado liyos murkav mishnei mine bria nivdalim legamre. We're the only source that has a bridge between these two worlds. I had very unfair definition at the beginning. Because I'm looking for something that's comparable to humans, but we're not really comparable to what I said I was looking for. We aren't just physical. We aren't just an animal. We aren't just spiritual. We bridge these two worlds. We bridge the spiritual world of the Malachim, which I denied as being possible for this creature. We're not just an animal. We know better. We have this aspect of Bechira. We have this spiritual soul. We are a bridge between the physical and spiritual world. Haynu ha'neshama elyona ve'aguf ha'shafel, ma shelo nimsa b'shum nivra acher. There's nothing else in the world, there's nothing else in the universe that has this quality of being a bridge between the physical and the spiritual. So while there might be, in fact, a spiritual creature somewhere out there, the stars might have intelligence, there might be some other thing out there that is potentially more lofty than us, they don't have the possibility to be physical. They don't have the possibility to come here and to mess up, to do good, to have the bechira. And there are lots of different things that are physical, and it could be there are physical aliens all over the place, could be they have much more going on than we do, but they can't actually be spiritual. They're just doing what they're told to do. They're just doing whatever it is that they do. We are the only thing that bridges that gap. We're the only thing that makes that world spiritual. So ultimately, everyone agrees, right? The point of the world is to have someone who can serve Hashem, who can use that neshama inside of them and bring it out by choosing good, by choosing to do mitzvahs, by choosing to learn Torah, by choosing to daven, do chesed. That's it. Nothing else in this world has that. Not animals, not aliens, not trees, just us. So whether or not, unfortunately, we're inconclusive, I happen to think the Meirus is certainly that it's compatible with Jewish thoughts. There are those who disagree, the Yosef Albos, but I think it's certainly compatible. When we do find an alien, when they finally get that news flash that is proves to be a little more compelling than three little dots that look photoshopped into the video in Myrtle Beach, okay, we'll welcome them with open arms, we can invite them as Shabbos guests. We're not bothered by this, but we'll know also that they're limited. They're not really something that impressive. They're not really something spiritual. That's our job in this world. And that, I think, should inspire us to really take our job seriously, take that responsibility, that opportunity seriously, and to really be Bala Dechira, to choose good in everything we're doing. So, have a great evening.
So there's not going to be a lot of us on Mars after all.
I wouldn't say that. The reality was, Lubavitcher Rebbe, there was a... I'm blanking on his name. There was a scientist who actually wrote to Lubavitcher Rebbe and asked, should he... He was becoming religious, and he was bothered by this question. Is, on the one hand, my field, the big popular thing to do right now is to look for life on other planets. On the other hand, how could I be doing this? He said, you can't say such a thing. If you think that you can limit a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then you're not even on the right track in any way. Get out of here. You have to look, absolutely, I'm not telling you you're going to find anything, but you have to look. You have to look wherever, and there was another case of somebody, there was a Jewish astronaut who brought a Sefer Torah, actually, up to Shemayim. Unfortunately, yeah. did not end well.
Actually, that's a good point, because if you look at Judith Resnick was a Jew, and Ilan Ramon
is one I was thinking of.
They're both of them, and they both died in, both of them,
There were those that got excited and tried to say, oh, this is why you shouldn't, like, I very much don't subscribe to that view. But it is, I think, speaks to this definition of this. If you look at this physical world as the Olam and you have to stay here, then this is going to be a problem for you. But if you look actually at the infinity of creation, with that itself, as the Rambam says, should bring you to Ahavas Hashem, it's amazing how gigantic and how infinite is that I can stay within this world and be so far from everything that humans know. It's, I think, in self-inspiring, speaks to some degree the loneliness of man, that we're within that vast array, we're the only ones that have this, but at the same time also how important it is that Kadosh Baruch Hu created a gigantic universe so we could do Torah mitzvahs. It's amazing. So, but yes, so keep looking. And if certain people get their way, there will be a Chabad house on at least the moon. I think the moon is really the first up there. But
Thank you very much.